Support for Deemable Tech is provided by A Small Orange, homegrown hosting, a refreshingly different approach to web hosting. On the web at asmallorange.com. From WJCT Studios in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And this is Deemable Tech, technology worth talking about and tech help worth listening to.
Got a question about your computer, smartphone, tablet, or the internet? Give us a call at 1-888-972-9868 or send us an email at questions@deemable.com. So today on the show, we'll be talking about jailbreaking iPhones and whether it's illegal to unlock your smartphone and
BlackBerry 10, and whether or not you can get apps for your Pantech Renew, and
sharing music with Dropbox.
But first, there were two big tech news items this week. First of all, Samsung revealed the next phone in its Galaxy S flagship phones, the appropriately titled S4.
There you go.
Features included a larger screen with 1080 by 1920 pixel resolution, and a 13 megapixel camera, eye-based scrolling, and the ability to use it with gloves. Tom, you got a Galaxy S3. Are you thinking of making the switch?
To be honest, Ray, I think I feel like you did sort of about going from the iPhone 4S to the iPhone 5. I think if you don't have a Galaxy S3 or you have an older Galaxy, by all means, you know, wait a month and pick up the S4 when it comes out. But it's not a quantum leap forward over the S3.
Yeah.
I mean, the screen resolution's nice. But personally, my S3 is still working out really well for me. In fact, I would say it continues to get better. So I'm not going to rush out and upgrade just yet.
Now, there was one thing with the eye scrolling feature. I haven't followed all the news because I'm not a Samsung fanboy. You know, Apple, I'm going to be like all over every single, you know, press release and keynote event. But the eye scrolling idea, basically you just look down the page and it senses that you're at the bottom of the page and then it scrolls up.
Sort of, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's a cool idea. I like the also with videos, apparently if you're watching a video and you take your eyes off the screen, it'll pause. And both of those ideas sound great in theory. Because I was just thinking, you know, like there's a show on YouTube that I like to watch. It's a news show. And I often like to just kind of leave it playing on my iPhone while I'm working. So I won't watch it the whole time unless there's obviously something visual that I need to be looking at. I'll look over and look at it. But the rest of the time, I'm actually not watching it. So I was kind of, and I'm ADD. So
first of all, this is
take
Samsung
my eyes off stuff all the time.
This is Samsung on Android. So I am sure it's a disableable feature.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
You know, it's going to be customizable. And second of all, it doesn't exactly work like they initially announced. I don't remember all the details, but sort of initially it sounded like, you know, you don't even need your hands anymore. You'll just look at your phone and it will magically know it. No, it's not really like that. There's a couple kind of gesture-y type things that it does, but they're very specific.
Yeah, they said there was something about you could hover your finger over.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing is like it's got a lot of like kind of no-touch gestures, which, and I'll be honest, I don't really understand the point. It's not that hard to touch my screen.
Yeah.
But I think that might be part of the technology that makes it work with gloves. So then more power to them.
Okay.
So, but personally, I'm not going to probably jump on this for this round. I'll wait for the S5 or whatever.
Yeah. It'll still be interesting to play with once it comes out.
Oh, absolutely.
So there was other big news.
Oh, that's right. What was the other big news you were mentioning?
Google has announced that as part of their annual spring cleaning, they will be shutting down Google Reader.
Was my reaction upon hearing that news earlier this week.
So since Google announced that it was closing Reader, its news aggregator service, we've actually received several questions here at Deemable Tech ranging from how do I live without it to what the heck is it and why is everyone freaking out?
Fair enough.
Ironically, this is something that affects people who read a lot of news.
Right.
And people who read a lot of news, there's a lot of journalists who read a lot of news.
Yes.
So the people that this impacts the most are tech journalists.
Absolutely.
Because they read tons of tech news all day. So you did something that hurt the people who write about you the most.
Yes, they did.
So that was kind of ironic.
And the other loud, angry audience that they hurt was the one I'm part of, the bloggers.
Bloggers, yeah.
You know?
So it's like
we have our own little private soapboxes and you just ticked us off.
It's like you have this you know, kind of niche audience, but they are the loudest.
Yes.
And the media and bloggers. And it's like,
and it's not that niche. I mean, I know we're going to have to explain to people what it is, but there was a website that posted, they did an analysis of their traffic, and they get more traffic out of Google Reader than they do from Google Plus, which is Google's, of course, big social network platform.
So for folks who are in that category, they have no idea what everyone's freaking out about. Google Reader, the best way I can describe it is it's the equivalent of a friendly butler that finds all the news that you're interested in reading from the news sources and blogs that you trust.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of having to open 10 different websites every day.
Or 100.
Or hundreds or thousands. You can just go to one page whenever you wanted to. You know, once a day, once a week, whenever. And it would automatically gather all of the stories that have been published by those websites that you follow since the last time you opened the page. And it would show you exactly how many have been published.
Right.
Even, and it was kind of great for sites that don't publish that often,
mm-hmm.
because you would just go to your Google Reader and be like, oh, look, Tom posted a new article,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that way you'd follow it. So now that you get this and you understand like how cool this is, you're probably just as upset as everyone else. but there is good news. There is hope. Other companies are stepping up to fill in the gap that Google Reader is leaving behind. Some of them work exactly the same way as Google Reader does. Others take what Google Reader does and improves upon it. Tom, you've been checking out one of them. What was it called?
I've been looking at Feedly. Feedly is a more graphical sort of version of RSS Reader. It actually, it's very customizable in the sort of layout and look and feel. But whereas Google Reader is very, it's almost infamous for its minimalism.
I mean,
it's, some people say it's ugly. For me, it's functional. You know, but Feely has a lot more zing and pizzazz, and shows pictures and stuff like that. Makes them a bigger part of the website. It's definitely more pleasing to look at. It's a little less chronologically organized than Google Reader is.
Okay. Yeah, and the weird thing is, a lot of folks might not even realize that Google Reader is the back end for a lot of news reader apps on Android and iOS.
And not just apps, in fact, but Feedly and many of these alternatives that we're going to mention here actually plug into the Google Reader backend. That's one of the reasons this is such a big blow in a way, is because Google basically created this backend server system that nobody can compete with,
right,
and everybody wound up using. And then they're shutting it off.
Yep.
What the heck?
Yeah, we're done.
Yeah.
Now, there is one called the Old Reader, which they've been around for a few years.
I guess they're old.
Yeah. What the idea was is Google made some changes to make Google Reader a little bit more social,
mm-hmm.
and some of the users didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they created their own version of Google Reader. It's almost exactly like Google Reader was about 5 years ago. The old reader already has been through this. They've already established their own databases, mm-hmm. and to make that work.
Yeah, but they're unfortunately, as I've discovered today, I was trying to test it out earlier. Again, like, they don't have the resources that Google has. So right now they're so slammed that, for instance, I was trying to import my feed so I could test them out. And they're like, you're 42,000th in line. You'll have to wait. I was like, holy mackerel.
Yeah, most of the companies that are doing these news readers, they're relatively small companies, especially compared to Google.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple other ones. We're going to check them out this week and give you a full rundown on Deemable.com. But just to give you the names of them now, there's NewsBlur, NetVibe, and Pulse.
Yes.
Some of those are iOS and Android apps. Some of them, like Feedly, is available on the web,
mm-hmm.
As well as an Android and an iOS app. So we're going to check those out, and we'll give you a full breakdown when we decide what we're going to do. Because we're both heavy Google Reader users ourselves.
I mean, when I just said, you know, 100 blogs, I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah,
I follow 100 blogs.
When I found out, I was like, I give up. I'm done.
Yeah, what do I do? I don't know. I'm lost.
How do I go on?
How do I go on?
I started singing Leanne Rimes.
How do I live?
Oh, no. And I said I would never sing on the show.
Oh, God.
We'll talk more about that later.
Yes, we will.
But for our audience, if you're listening and you're a Google Reader user, what are you planning on using to replace Google Reader? Have you made the switch over yet? How's it going? Let us know.
We would love to hear from you.
Hit us up on Facebook, mm-hmm. or Twitter, or email us, you know, questions@deemable.com. And we'll see. But ultimately, we can make it through this.
Together.
Together. Stay strong.
Stay strong.
It's like this tragedy for nerds and journalists.
Hey, let's do some questions.
All right, let's do some questions.
We have a question here from Brianna in Jax.
Cool.
She says, "Hey, I've been listening to your show, but I don't often have a whole hour to pay attention to the computer at one point in the day. Also, sometimes I don't have a huge interest in a particular topic, horrors, but later decide I really wanted to know about something you spoke about in a past show. Anyway, would it be possible to put sections in the show notes, sort of using the little music breaks as dividers and saying, in section one, we cover these topics. Section two, which starts at minute marker 20, discusses these, and section three at minute marker 40, includes the others." She's been paying attention.
Yeah, she has.
Then I could easily come back to the section where I had to quit listening, or I could quickly find a particular subject I'm listening to. Perhaps there's some other way I could find that info, but my tech savvy mostly comes from pushing buttons and Googling answers to my questions, and I'm not really doing either of those with podcasts. So anyway, thanks for the show.
Well, thanks for your email, Brianna. Actually, I kind of wish you could search on a podcast for words, but it doesn't quite work that way yet. We agree with you
completely.
This is something that we really want to improve about our website. A few of our older episodes do have that. We broke down, you know, like when the questions were. We even had them down to the minute and the second. We had the questions and when it started in the show. But the problem is really time.
Yeah.
A lot of folks think we get paid to do this. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much. That's such a great compliment. But actually, we're all volunteers. Tom and I work elsewhere 40 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
Sean does work here at the station, our producer, but he doesn't get paid to do this. So Deemable Tech takes about 30 hours a week combined to produce each episode of the show. Doing the show notes like that took an extra 2 to 3 hours each week, roughly, because you have to go through and listen to the entire episode again.
And who wants to do that?
I mean, listen to it once is enough. And you have to write down when each question started, and then you kind of have to rephrase the question so that it's just a sentence instead of a paragraph. So it doesn't seem like a lot, but it actually does end up being a little bit of work. And I haven't been able to since I started writing the blogs for Folio Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of traded that time off. Now, what we have found out that is that it helps radio stations when they're considering to air our show if we can provide a transcript of each show.
Mm-hmm.
But that would take even more work because some of what we say is scripted, but a lot of it isn't. But I do think that'd be helpful for our listeners too.
Sure.
So again, we really want to produce better show notes, but we are limited in what we can do because of our budget constraints. You know, not having one. Now, here is where you could help. If we had a volunteer that would help us, we might be able to bring that back. What we would need is someone to come to the studio with us when we record or listen live online. We might have that up pretty soon. And they would just keep track of when we start new questions and then take those notes and put them together with the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you or someone you know would be willing to help us out, send me an email at rayhollister@deemable.com and you might be able to get that back.
I mean, if you've always wanted to hang out in a radio studio, this could be your big chance.
Could be. Also, we are looking for somebody to help us with video. If you can click a button, you might be able to do that. So really all it is just switching cameras that are already set to the position. So you might be able to do that and help us out with that also. So now, speaking of which, we are doing things a little differently now to save some time. Since we're not on the radio, we're not going to use the radio schedule clock anymore. We're going to just do a podcast for 20 to 40 minutes roughly. And, you know, when we get tired of hearing our own voices, we'll stop talking and we'll wrap it up that way. So we're just doing that to kind of help alleviate that time cost.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, it does take a lot of time just to produce it to the specifications for public radio.
It does.
But once we do get picked up by a radio station, obviously we'll go back to that. But for now, we're just going to do it for fun.
We figured we're podcasting, you're podcast listeners, and we should just do a podcast.
Yeah.
So.
But one thing that you brought up in your email that I actually didn't address is that you mentioned you don't have a whole hour to pay attention to your computer. I don't know if you have a smartphone, Brianna, but you can get us on your iPhone and Android as well.
Absolutely.
There's a couple of great podcast apps for iOS. There's Podcast, which is by Apple.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one I end up using now. Do you have a good one for Android?
I'm using Dog Catcher, 2 G's in dog for some reason. But there are a plethora of podcast apps out there. You will not starve for podcast apps on Android.
Some pretty good ones that cost a few dollars, and there's a couple of free ones too.
Yeah.
So check those out, and then you can download them to your phone and take them with you on the road.
Yep.
So. All right. Well, we got another email. Can you grab that one?
Yeah, this one is from Richard. He writes, my coworker has a jailbroken iPhone, and she keeps trying to convince me that I should let her jailbreak my iPhone too. My iPhone 4S is out of warranty now, but I'm still afraid of breaking it. I can't afford to replace it right now. Not that I don't trust her, but if I do, I'd like to do it myself. Is it hard to do? Is it worth jailbreaking? Is there any chance I can get in trouble? What happens if something screws up and my iPhone doesn't work anymore?
Thanks for your email, Richard. Actually, I talked about this in Folio Weekly recently. I wrote an article about it.
Yeah.
I say the same thing I did in there. I don't blame you for being cautious. Personally, I had never tried jailbreaking an iPhone either until I received your email. I've always been a little scared to attempt to jailbreak my iPhone because I was kind of worried it might break too.
Yep.
It's my daily driver. It's the phone I use every day. So I was a little worried. But actually, I talked to somebody recently at OneSpark who had their iPad jailbroken, and I couldn't figure out how to unlock it. And I was like, I was there to do a video talking about our OneSpark project, about how we were a tech help show, and I was like, I don't know how to do this. I feel really stupid now. So we talked about it for a little bit, and she was like, it's super easy now. You know, here's how you do it. And so I you know, screwed up my courage and decided to give it a shot.
All right.
So in answer to your question, is it hard to do? No, it's really not. It used to be a lot harder. I mean, back in the day when the first iPhone jailbreak happened, you had to physically take the iPhone apart. So
wow.
It was a little bit harder. You had to have some soldering skills.
There were lasers involved.
Yeah. So, and honestly, if you're considering doing it, you probably have the skills to do it. If you're even thinking about it, you probably have the skills. Is it worth it? Well, it all depends on what you want out of your phone. If you're content with how your phone works and you don't want to take any risks whatsoever, then it's probably not worth it to you. But if you would like to try apps that, you know, maybe aren't allowed in the App Store for whatever reason, or you'd like to customize your iPhone to work the way you want it to, or you just, you know, enjoy tinkering, you'll probably enjoy jailbreaking your iPhone. There are a lot of really cool customizations, like alternate keyboards and different themes. And there are a ton of great apps that you can't get in the App Store.
Ooh.
Not because, like, you know, they're porn or they have viruses, but because Apple just won't allow it to happen. An example that I really like is there's an app called I Caught You that takes a picture whenever someone tries to enter your passcode into the phone and fails.
Huh.
So, like, if you try to enter the passcode and you don't get it, it takes a picture of whoever's holding your phone. So it kind of catches them in the act.
That's cool.
But because the app uses the camera in a way that Apple didn't design, that will never be allowed in the App Store. So, also, ironically, if you want to see what will likely be in the next version of iOS, check out Cydia. Cydia is the App Store that you get when you have a jailbroken iPhone. You know how you can take a picture by pressing the volume button on iPhone? Yeah, jailbreakers had that first. You know how you can double tap the home button to open another app that you were just running? Yeah, jailbreakers had that first.
Huh.
You know how you can change your wallpaper? Well, yeah, jailbreakers, you know, you get the point. Many of the new features in each version of iOS are features that jailbreakers already had for months or years before the new iOS came out.
Really?
Yeah. So, now, in answer to your question, is there a chance you'll get in trouble? Yes, of course. I mean, it could happen, but probably not, at least not with the law. The Library of Congress has said that it is legal to jailbreak smartphones, period. Strangely, the same is not true about the iPad.
Really?
Yeah, it has to do with the vague definition of what a tablet device is.
Huh.
Because a tablet device can be anything from an iPad or an Android tablet to a computer. So it has to do with that. But, of course, you know, the lawyers for the movie, music, and copyright lawyers are fighting to change that. So when it comes to law, of course, as you know, things can change from day to day.
Yes.
And, of course, you could get in trouble with Apple. As of yet, Apple has never tried to take legal action against jailbreakers, but even though, you know, you're not breaking the law technically, you are breaking the terms of service that you agreed to when you set up your device. So obviously, if you brick your iPhone, you know, damage it beyond the point of repair, while jailbreaking your iPhone, don't think about taking your iPhone to the folks at the Genius Bar. So, and you also asked what happens if you screw up your phone. Well, fortunately, that really isn't as great a risk as it used to be when you had to take it apart and put it back together again.
Yeah.
Even if it does happen, you can usually just restore your iPhone back to the factory default settings.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, don't get too excited. You can still brick your phone. But it is much safer than it used to be. You know, but jailbreaking is dangerous. It's
risky.
They
call it jailbreaking. They don't call it Sunday driving.
Exactly. you know, you are intentionally making something work in a way that it was not intended to by the company that created it. So in doing that, you take on all the possible risk and benefits on yourself. You're on your own. But, you know, you're really not alone because there's a whole community of jailbreakers out there who are willing to help you. So ultimately, I can't tell you if it's worth it. It's up to you. If you want to do it and you're willing to take the risk, give it a shot. And I did write up a complete guide on how to jailbreak your iPhone. It's available at Deemable.com. So check it out. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I tried it myself. I jailbroke my iPhone. And
your phone still works?
It's, you know, I was expecting unicorns and rainbows. And honestly, I got an app. It's the Cydia app. It wasn't that exciting.
Yeah.
I started playing.
You added that little notification drop-down.
I did. Yeah, there was one thing. The problem is that a lot of them cost money.
Oh, yeah.
I'm used to the way it was on Palm Web OS, where mm-hmm. you know everything was free for the homebrew, which is basically the same as jailbreaking. And when I downloaded Cydia and I started looking through that, a lot of it costs money, like the good stuff. So I was kind of hesitant to spend money on a tweak or an app that only worked on jailbroken iPhones. So that was kind of like, eh. But I did find one that allows me to, just by pulling down the notification bar with one tap, I can turn Wi-Fi on or off. I can turn Bluetooth on or off. And that was cool. So I'm obviously a newbie when it comes to jailbreaking, but I haven't found any reason not to do it yet. But I haven't found any really compelling reason to do it either. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Cool.
Well, should we take a break?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we have more of your questions. This is Deemable Tech. Welcome back to Deemable Tech. I'm Ray Hollister, joined, of course, by my co-host, Tom Brown. Hey, wanted to let you guys know, if you haven't heard already, we are doing a Kickstarter project.
What's a Kickstarter, Ray?
Kickstarter is a crowdfunding platform where you can support things that you like or things that you want to see happen by kicking in some money to start it off. That's cool. The best I could come up with off the top of my head. Kickstarter is where you've seen a lot of new things like the Pebble Watch.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually did a segment a while ago called Kickable, yep, where we talked about Kickstarter projects.
Yeah, people are kickstarting all kinds of things today, too, not just tech podcasts and tech stuff. Like, I'm really excited because one of my favorite TV shows from about the last decade or so,
yes,
Veronica Mars, the creator of that show got with Kristen Bell, the actress, and they did a Kickstarter to make a Veronica Mars movie, and their goal was $2 million, and they made
the highest ever goal.
And they made that in 24 hours or less.
Yeah, you know? They're doing really great.
So, but yeah, we've got a Kickstarter going, and I think it has a slightly lower goal.
Yeah, we're only trying to raise $1,000. And it ends Monday, March 25th at 7 p.m. Eastern time. That's really important because if we don't hit our goal by then, we get nothing.
Zilch.
Zip. Zero.
Nada.
Just to tell you what it's about, we are trying to build a mobile app for iOS and Android so that we can reach a larger audience. Basically, podcasts are hard for people to subscribe to. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't do podcasts. They don't know how they work. Ironically, that's our audience. Those mm-hmm. are the people that we need to reach out to that need our help. So an app, everybody can download an app. You go to the App Store, you go to Google Play, you download an app. So this will allow us to reach out to a lot larger audience so they can find out about Deemable Tech. We're also going to have it where you can, with one button, you can click to call us mm-hmm. and leave a voicemail or to send a message to us, questions. So make it a lot easier for you guys to interact with us as well, with links to our Facebook and Twitter too. So, and we'll make it more, we'll add more features as, you know, you come up with them or we come up with them. So that's why we're doing this. If you can contribute anything, $1, $5, $10,
$100,
$100, $200, anything, any amount will really help us out. So if you're thinking to yourself, hey, that's great, but I really can't afford anything, just go in there and pledge a buck. You know, if you get more money later, you can change it. Or if you're thinking, maybe I can do $20, but I'm not sure until next Monday, go in there and pledge the $20. And if you got to change it, you can change it. It's just a pledge. But it has to be in by Monday, March 25th at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That's when we will the Kickstarter will end. And it's over at that point if we haven't raised it. So that's only 7 days from today. It ends and we got 10 backers so far. We've raised $306, so we're a third of the way there.
Yeah.
We can do this. You can help. So if you check it out, go to dmbl.co/kick. That's DMBL, short for Deemable, dmbl.co/kick. Or you can go to Deemable.com. There's a link on the right-hand side. Or you can go to Kickstarter.com and search for Deemable, and there you'll find us. So, okay, enough talking about that. Go do that, please, 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 please.
We love you.
Please,
we love you guys.
Please, please.
Did we tell you how good you look sitting there listening to this podcast today?
You're awesome. Yeah. We love you so much. Mm. Okay, let's answer a question. That's what we do. Let's see. Robert writes, I've heard that it is now illegal to unlock your cell phone. Is that really true?
That is correct, Robert. The Library of Congress decided that starting on January 26th of this year, so a date that's already in the past, unlocking your cell phone would no longer be legal.
Now, to be clear, that's unlocking your cell phone, not rooting or jailbreaking it, right?
Right, Ray, or the feds would be hauling you off to jail right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, unlocking your cell phone is when you buy a phone on one carrier, like AT&T, and then you want to switch to another carrier, like, say, for example, Sprint, and you want to take your phone with you. Ordinarily, the phone is locked to the original carrier, right? Mm-hmm. But with unlocking, you can basically get your phone and use it on a different network.
Right, and before, there's a few different ways to do this. Before locking became illegal again, you could pay some services to do an official unlock for you, at least for iPhones.
Right, they could just add your phone's unique IMEI number to the database of unlocked phones, and you were set. Now, obviously, that is no longer an option for U.S. customers, so you would have to get a different SIM card or download some software. Yes, Virginia, there is an app for that. But if you did so, according to the Library of Congress, you would be breaking the law.
Okay, so what does the Library of Congress have to do this? Since when do they make rules about cell phones?
Since the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, or the DMCA, gave them the power. The DMCA makes bypassing digital protections of copyrighted works illegal, but what happens is it gives the Library of Congress the power to designate exceptions. Mm. So up until recently, the Library of Congress had said that unlocking your cell phone was one of those exceptions. Now it seems that, in fact, they've changed their mind. Now, not everybody is okay with this. In fact, President Obama has released a public statement saying that he would like the Library of Congress to change its mind, and the FCC is investigating whether they have any say in the matter. At this moment, though, it looks like the law is on the side of the Library of Congress. We don't elect Library of Congress members, but we do elect lawmakers. If you want to make your voice heard, download Congress Plus for the iPhone, or contact Congress in the Play Market for Android. These apps will tell you who your local senator or congressperson are and give you ways to contact them. Ask Congress to change the DMCA to give consumers the freedom to choose which carrier they use their phone on. Make your voice heard. Set our cell phones free.
That was really inspiring, Tom.
I may just be a tech podcaster, Ray, but I'm a patriotic tech podcaster.
All right. It actually shows in the script that I should say, show enough, but I'm not going to do that.
You just did it.
Dang it. All right, Tom, who's the next question from?
Your mom.
Okay, Tom, I know we're playing around here. We're keeping it loose, but let's keep this professional.
No, really, your mom sent us a question.
What?
Yeah, she asks, has version 10 been released yet? Is it a smart move to continue with BlackBerry as our phone?
Oh, okay. So, Mom, thanks for the email. So,
and you doubted me.
So, Mom, you don't really listen to the show regularly, do you? It's okay. I understand. It's just on Deemable Tech, we do pick on BlackBerry a lot. Mm. So, yes, in answer to your question, a BlackBerry 10 has been released. It came out on January 30th, but it doesn't really matter because you're not getting it unless you decide to buy a new phone. BlackBerry 10 runs on the new devices, the Q10 and the Z10. Basically, the change from BlackBerry OS to BlackBerry 10 was so drastic that none of the previous devices supported it. So, also, none of the apps that you have on your current phone, I forget which one you've got. I think you got the Curve. I'm not sure, though. I could be wrong. It doesn't matter, though. No matter what phone you have, none of the apps that you have are going to work on a new BlackBerry 10 device.
Really? They're starting from scratch?
Yeah, it's starting from scratch all over again. I think there is some way to get them to work on the new devices, but it's
not pretty.
I mean, there was when Palm came out with WebOS. Mm-hmm. You could put Palm OS apps on there, but it's going to be an emulator, so that means it's not going to work right.
Yeah.
So no matter what phone you get, even if it is a new BlackBerry, you're still going to have to buy new apps. So if that's a reason why you might be wanting to stick with BlackBerry, don't use that as your reason, because either way, you're going to have to buy new apps.
Hmm.
Now, to tell you the truth, I've checked out BlackBerry 10, and it looks pretty decent. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, it looks nice. In fact, it looks a lot like WebOS.
Oh, I see.
It looks exactly like WebOS. I mean, it reminds me a lot of WebOS. And the thing is, BlackBerry seems to be repeating exactly what Palm did in 2009. On top of the fact that the OS actually looks very, very similar. See, what happened in 2009 is Palm was hurting really bad. They were losing money like crazy. iOS and Android were just chewing up their market share. And Palm OS, the old operating system, looked really old and decrepit. So Palm rebuilt their operating system from the ground up. They launched new devices. They relaunched the whole company. But they took a really long time to bring it to market.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did finally bring it to market, they completely abandoned their old customers. Everybody had to start over with WebOS. So, and like I said, BlackBerry is doing practically the exact same thing. They came out with BlackBerry 10 a long time ago. It's been out in the news for years. I guess mm-hmm. it's like 2 years now. And they finally got it on a phone. And I honestly think that the same thing's going to happen to them. So to answer your question, I would say no. It's not a smart move to continue with BlackBerry. I really think that BlackBerry is going to take the same path or very similar to the one that Palm took. I expect that the Q10, the Z10 are probably going to sell fairly poorly. BlackBerry will probably attempt to put out another version of the Q10 and the Z10, but they'll also sell fairly poorly. BlackBerry might then attempt to get other manufacturers to use their operating system like WebOS or Palm did with WebOS. But they won't be able to get really anyone interested because who wants an operating system that's dying?
Exactly.
And finally, they'll end up selling out to another company or filing bankruptcy, or they'll release BlackBerry 10 as open source. Does this all sound familiar?
Mm.
Sounds like what HP did with WebOS.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter how you slice it, I don't see good things in BlackBerry's future. Now, I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. It doesn't happen often, but every now and then I'm wrong.
Unthinkable.
But it just, it looks so much exactly like what happened with Palm with WebOS that I just can't see it going any other way. Now, the smartphone industry, as much as BlackBerry fanboys and Microsoft fanboys would love to have it a different way, it's a two-dog race.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is iPhone and there's Android. And now Android has eaten up so much of the market share from iPhone that iPhone is starting to drop back in terms of overall market share, too. So It's really just iPhone and Android out there. And I just don't think that there is room in the market for another operating system to be a real competitor. It might hang on. It might. I don't even see it really hanging on and staying in mm-hmm. business. Microsoft phone, we've talked about it. It has its flaws that we've talked about on the show. But I think it's a decent operating system. I personally felt that WebOS was the perfect operating system from heaven, but neither of them were able to get anywhere near a decent market share where they'd be anywhere near competitive. Microsoft's trying their hardest and Nokia's out there pushing it,
mm-hmm.
but it's still the same. They barely have like a 1% market share. So Mom, what I would tell you to do, if you're looking to get something right now, get the iPhone 4 for free from Sprint. I mean, it's free. If you're still under contract, of course, you know, wait until the iPhone 5S or the 6 comes out or whatever. And you can get the iPhone 4S for free, the one that I have now.
There you go.
You know, if you're not interested in iPhone, there are some good Android phones out there for free or for fairly cheap, too. Mm-hmm. So I am an iPhone fanboy. I admit that. I'm an Apple fanboy. But I respect Android as a serious phone. BlackBerry, I can't show it any respect. Now, here's the thing. If I'm wrong, you can always go back.
That's true.
Because you're never going to go back to what you got now. That's gone. They've left that. They're mm-hmm. moving on to BlackBerry 10, and everything will be BlackBerry 10 from now on. So, you know, if that ship doesn't sink, you can always buy a ticket to get on board later.
Good metaphor.
If you decide that iPhone or Android isn't working for you. But, you know, there is that the 4 right now for free, or you can get the 4S whenever the next device comes out.
Right. So cool.
All right. Linda writes, my friend installed Dropbox on my computer and set up a shared folder so we could share music. We both love European dance music. Confession, he has sent me so much stuff and I haven't had a chance to look at it. Now I want to and I don't know how. My question is two-part. How do I download music from our shared folder in Dropbox? Is it through the website? And two, can he tell that I haven't listened to all the music yet? Oh, and also, once before, he helped me fix something on my computer by taking it over remotely. Can he still do that? I have Windows 7. Thanks.
Good question, Linda. Now, you can download any file you have access to on the Dropbox website by right-clicking it and selecting download. And make sure to put the file someplace where you can find it, and that's pretty much all you have to do. However, if your friend installed Dropbox on your computer, you don't need to download the files. They're already on your computer. That's the whole point of Dropbox. So first, we need to make sure that Dropbox really is installed on your computer. The simple way to do that is to click on the Start menu, then type Dropbox. Your typing should appear in the search box at the bottom of the menu. After a few seconds, the Dropbox program should open up, and it's got an icon that sort of looks like an open blue box. So if you see that, you've got the program installed. Now, step two is to determine where the Dropbox folders are located on your computer. They're like normal folders in the Windows operating system. They look exactly like regular folders.
Right.
And so you just need to find out where they are so that you can find out where your friend's European dance cache is. So
I think by default it puts it in the My Documents folder, doesn't it?
Yeah, that is the default.
Okay.
But it always installs a shortcut to its folders under your favorites. Now, this is not your Internet Explorer favorites. This is your Windows Explorer favorites. Yeah. So if you go back to the Start menu and click on Computer, that will open a Windows Explorer folder. And the bar on the left side of the window there has a bunch of folders like pictures and documents and music. But up at the very top, you may have to scroll up to see it. There should be a section called Favorites. It will contain your desktop folder as well as the Dropbox folder. If you see Dropbox there, click it. Now you're in the Dropbox folders. You'll have to find your music files on your own, Linda, because I don't know, you know, where your friend put them. You can either click through the folders there or search for a song you know he sent you in the search Dropbox box right at the top of the window.
Dropbox box.
Search,
box.
That's what it says.
You weren't repeating. The Dropbox box. You're right.
It's a remix.
Box, 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 box.
Thanks. I'll stop. Yeah. Now, every file in Dropbox folder should have a green check mark next to it,
right?
Which means that you've downloaded it from Dropbox's cloud. If it has a blue icon, it's still uploading or downloading, so you'll have to wait before using it. The icons tell you that you are sharing that file with the Dropbox cloud. There's a copy on your computer, and there's a copy out there in Dropbox's servers, basically. What the icons don't tell you, Linda, is whether or not you've ever used, opened, looked at, or listened to any of those files. All you know is that you have them, and that's all your friend is going to know, okay? So I don't believe he has any way at all to tell that you haven't listened to his music, unless you tell him yourself.
Oh, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay, but Linda mentioned that her friend accessed her computer remotely once. How does she know that he can't do it again?
Well, I don't have all the details, but most likely the last time he accessed her computer, the most common way to do sort of what she's describing would be with Windows Remote Assistance. And this is a program that comes with Windows that allows you to send an invitation to someone to share your desktop so you can they can help you with the problem. Right. Now, Linda, Windows Remote Assistance is by invitation only. Unless you run the program and intentionally send your friend an invitation to help you, he can't log in. So he can't be snooping around your computer when you're not looking. You absolutely have to invite him intentionally.
Yeah, unless he installed a VNC program on her computer.
Yeah, or, I mean, if he's installed keyloggers and stuff, you're in trouble. But yeah. Hopefully he's not that kind of friend.
Most likely you're fine. Yeah. It is an invitation-only thing with Windows Remote Assistance. A lot of people don't know how to do what I was talking about, the VNC server. And it takes a lot of work. You probably would have noticed a lot of weird things happening on your screen while he was doing it. So
yeah, I mean, if you ever see your mouse moving on its own, or someone who's logged into your computer, the last login wasn't you, then maybe be suspicious. But in general, I think there's a 99% chance that you are completely safe, unless he's just done something completely dastardly. you're okay. So your secret is safe with us, Linda. But if you want to have a little fun with your friend, remember that those shared drop folders in Dropbox go both ways. Mm. You can add files to them as well as he can. So you could, you know, drop a little text file in there that says, "Hey, enjoying the music you sent," and then see how long it takes for your friend to notice that it's even there.
European dance music.
You know, techno kind of. Like you were doing a minute ago.
Like I was doing. Yeah, okay, yeah. Cool. We do have one more question. Let's grab it before we head out of here.
Okay.
Can you grab it? Joelle's question?
Yeah, Joelle asks, "Dear Demultech, I have a question that I am pining for your expert opinion about." She's pining. "What is the best calendar app for a Pantech renew? I tried Googling it, but nothing really comes up. I am app ignorant."
Well, that is okay. Don't worry about it, because when I was searching an answer for your question, it took a lot of work to find anything about the Pantech renew. At first I thought it was Android, because I was like, oh, it's got a touchscreen. It must be an Android, and it's not. Mm-hmm. The Pantech Renew runs on Pantech's proprietary operating system, which is based on an old operating system called Brew.
B-R-E-W.
Yeah, and if it sounds like it might have something to do with Java, which we've talked about on this episode before, it's because it does. Brew is an operating system that runs Java Micro Edition. It was operating system that was designed specifically so that developers could build programs for mobile phones. And it uses, or it should be able to run, J2ME apps. And that's what the short term for Java Micro Edition. It was part of Java. The whole point was that people could build a program for one place and they could put it everywhere.
Right.
So you could build it for the web, you could build it for Windows, Mac, phones, Android, even, you know, it came out later. But unfortunately, it's not really how it worked out. It was really only if you had the Java Micro Edition runtime could you do it on your phone. I remember I had a Palm Centro, which was Palm OS, and you could install the runtime, but nobody supported it. So anyways, so actually, before the iPhone came out, everything in mobile was made for either J2ME or for Palm OS back then. Mm-hmm. But once the iPhone hit the market and then Android became a legitimate option, most developers just stopped building apps for J2ME.
Mm-hmm.
And there were only a handful of J2ME app developers back then. So unfortunately, there aren't many apps available for J2ME. They've either, you know, nobody's adopting it, and the ones who were developing it for it, they've just stopped developing for it. They just let their apps die. So the answer to your question is, the best calendar app is going to be anything you can find. There's a couple of them that may be available in your app store, and that's the one thing that's a problem, is that typically the app stores are locked to your carrier. So even though there's probably a bunch of apps that work for the Pantech Renew, you may only be able to get them from your app store,
right,
which is through AT&T, because I know the Renew is only on AT&T. You can try, there's an app called GCal, which is a J2ME Google Calendar client. That one actually works pretty well. If that one doesn't work, you may be able to use GCal Sync, which is an app that syncs the built-in calendar with the Renew with Google Calendar. And, of course, this is assuming you use Google Calendar.
Yeah.
And both of those apps do use data, so if you don't have a data plan, you might want to stay away from them. But whatever you do, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about with BlackBerry, I wouldn't pay for anything in the App Store for the Pantech Renew.
Definitely not.
You'll likely never be able to use any of those apps ever again. There are a few fun apps, though. If you can download apps to your device from the web, they're free. There's the Opera web browser, which they're still supporting, and it works most likely better than whatever your default web browser is, assuming you have a data plan again. There is a Gmail app that still works if you have Gmail. Google does not support it anymore, though. So, you know, use it at your own risk. And don't be surprised if it suddenly stops working. And there is a Tetris app if you want to play Tetris on your phone.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be honest, if you want apps, you probably need to invest in a beefier phone, one that runs iOS or Android or Windows Phone. Those all have app stores with lots of third-party apps, which will run across a number of different phones. But, you got a smaller, older phone, and it's just not cross-compatible with a lot of stuff. So yeah, there's not a lot out there for it.
Well, I guess that's about all the time we have.
I believe so, sadly.
Well, thank you for all your questions, and keep them coming. Give us a call on our toll-free number. It's 1-888-972-9868, or you can send us an email at questions@deemable.com. Before you stop the podcast, make sure to check out our Kickstarter at dmbl.co/kick, or just go to deemable.com, and you'll see the link in the right-hand side. If the Kickstarter's still up, it'll still be up there. Got until Monday, March 25th at 7 p.m., at 7:01, it's too late.
It's so done.
It's over. And it's finished. If you didn't support, and we didn't make it, it's all your fault.
Mm.
That's pretty much it. You know, the lights go off. We can't pay the bills.
That's right.
No, we just can't make
it. Sean is out on the street.
we just won't make an app. You know, you won't get an app from us. Fine.
Too bad.
That's okay. But hey, there are some really awesome rewards if you want them.
There's some great rewards.
There's a mouse pad. There's some cool stickers. There's even a stress ball.
Did we decide to do one with your face on it?
We're not going to do one with my face on it. Unless there's a high demand for it.
Yeah.
Everyone says, I want the one with Ray's face on it so I can throw it against the wall. Then right now we only have one vote. Sean has voted for one. Sean wants the one with my face on it. So, but
I just think it would be the best one out of all those options. It is.
So, it's kind of hard, though, because they only print in three colors. So doing a picture would kind of be rough. But maybe we could do a drawing of my face.
Yeah.
With my beard.
That would be good.
Round and beardy.
So, yep. Round and beardy. So, but definitely go check it out. Support us. Any amount you can do will help. And also, subscribe to our show if you haven't already. You can search for Deemable Tech on iTunes, or you can always point your favorite podcast app to dmbl.co/pod. Our producer is Sean Birch. I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And this is Deemable Tech. Thanks for listening, and have a great week. Support for Deemable Tech is provided by A Small Orange, homegrown hosting, a refreshingly different approach to web hosting, on the web at asmallorange.com.